and of deaf educators. Her grandfather and later her father were superintendents of the New York School for the Deaf at White Plains in the New York area, and was the second permanent school for the deaf in America. She was the dean of women at Gallaudet College for more than 50 years. That was a long time.
Let me stop at this point and ask if there's anyone in our audience who would like to share a story or ask a question of our participants here.
Is there someone named Doctor?
Oh, yes. Doctor, right. How did you hear about him?
I read it on a little thing. I didn't read the whole thing.
Comment on that. We called him Doc. He was a professor at Gallaudet College for about 40 years. He was Gallaudet College's world ambassador, and he traveled all over the world talking to groups about deafness. He was well known. He had a big stomach, and his belt was very large, and he loved to laugh. And when he laughed, we'd always tease him about his belt would be bouncing up and down. Doc was born and raised in Olathe, Kansas, where the Kansas School for the Deaf is. And his brother was deaf. And because his brother was deaf, Doc and his sister, Mary, became educators of the deaf. And I met his deaf brother one time, and he told me that I'm very, very bright on sports, but Doc is smart in history. His sister still lives in Oklahoma. She's retired. I'm not exactly sure where she taught, but she is retired.
We've been telling a lot of stories up here that are kind of funny about deaf history, but actually one thing that has impressed me over and over again as I've met more and more of our deaf participants and deaf friends is how many people in the deaf community are admired and how many stories are kept about those people because they are models for younger deaf people in the community. And I wonder perhaps if we might turn our attention a little bit toward these heroes in the deaf community. And I'd like to ask our participants if they might like to share perhaps some notion of what a deaf hero is, a story about a hero in the deaf community.
Because of my interest in art, as he says, I like to say art exaggeratedly, really one of my favorite deaf heroes, he was a deaf man himself, and he was a well-known artist also. His name was Cad Washburn. He worked in museums all over the world. You name the museum in Europe and his works are there. But very impressed with how he overcame his deafness. He was born hearing, yes, in Maine. He moved to Michigan or Minnesota, and he became deaf at 5, and from that point on he never spoke another word again. He turned his voice off, closed his mouth, that was it. But he didn't let that refuse to stop him. When he went to Gallaudet College, back at a long time ago, anyone who could graduate had to give a farewell address, a speech, to all the people who were interested in education, not just to the special educators, but educators in general, superintendents and principals of public school systems in D.C. would come and listen. Several teachers from different schools would come. And guess what his topic was? To this day, I still lose my breath every time I think about his topic. Word for word, the working mind of a spider. And so he was it was so impressive that the superintendent of the D.C. public school system asked Washburn permission to put that in the fifth and sixth grade science book for public school systems all over D.C. All right? But that's not the end of it. I have more, and I won't let you go. After he graduated, he was practicing his art, yes, but felt he couldn't make a living out of it yet. He needed more practice. So guess what he decided to do? He became a newspaper reporter. A reporter. And he traveled all over the world. And I must tell you the story of what happened to him while he was in Mexico. He took a terrible time to go to Mexico because at that time, Mexico was in the middle of their Spanish Civil War. And he saw fighting and struggles and so forth all around him. And he decided he wanted to have an interview with the dictator of Mexico. And to see what his dreams for his people, what did he want from his country. And so he went to his headquarters. And oh my, the room was full, packed with reporters who wanted a chance to see the man, the dictator, the president of the country. And Washburn surveyed the room, knew he had no chance. Too many people were ahead of him. You know what he did? He left the room. He went to the store. And you know why he went to the store? He went to a fancy store and bought himself a black coat with long tails and a high black hat and with a cane hung on his arm and white gloves. And white spats for his shoes, for his black shoes. Oh, it made him look so like a dashing figure. Wow. So he went back to the headquarters, all dressed up, and walked very softly into the room. And he opened the door. And everybody's eyes turned to him. And they said, "Who's that man?" "I don't know, I don't know." "Well, you don't know who he is. Must be someone from U.S., maybe an ambassador. I don't know, I don't know." Washburn walked very coolly and very collected right up to the desk. And before he could do anything, the woman at the desk said, "One moment, mister, wait a minute, sir. I'll be right back," and ran into the dictator's office and asked him, says, "There's a man out there who looks very important. I don't know who he is. What am I going to do with him? What shall I do?" The dictator said, "Okay, all right. Let him come in just for 5 minutes. Just give him 5 minutes. Okay, okay. Sir, you may enter." Washburn bowed his head. Just slightly, didn't know, not a word was spoken. Went into the room, and the two men's eyes met, and they looked at each other. Washburn, the dictator said, "Have a seat." Washburn sat down, took out his pad, his faithful paper and pencil, and it so happened that he wrote in such fluent Spanish, he knew Spanish, he refused to let his deafness stop him, he learned several languages and wrote fluently and confessed his deafness to the dictator. The dictator was so impressed, he says, "You're a deaf man dressed like this and speaking my language better than my own people?" You know what happened? He gave him a 1 hour interview, laid out all his dreams, his objectives for his country, the whole thing. For an hour, they rode back and forth, and at the end, they shook hands, and he left. And Washburn sent that article, interview, to Chicago newspaper, which was the biggest scoop of the year. And 3 weeks later, that dictator was killed.
I've kept a secret from some of you until this time. We have here a very special person in Jack Gannon, and I would like to show you why. That book, Deaf Heritage, is a tremendous work for the deaf community. Jack has managed to do extensive research, to travel all over collecting stories, collecting the history of the American deaf community. And just in the past year, he has published this enormous work, which incidentally we have on sale over here in our crafts tent, but that's incidental. He's published it. I think in his head there are more stories of the history of the deaf community in America than would fit into anyone else's head. And I would like to ask Jack to say something to you about, well, perhaps just about his favorite part of the book, perhaps about writing the book, whatever he prefers to tell you, because I think this is a very important event, the publication of this first narrative history of the deaf community in America.
Thank you. That's a hard thing to do. I've told everybody that I met that that book is only a scratch on the surface, and that's true. The best thing about writing that book is it's about a group of people I know, and I'm one of them. I've always been proud to be a deaf American, but when I finished that book, I was even more proud than before. And I think, and I hope, that young deaf people, when they read that book, they will feel the same way. We've had many, many deaf heroes, but the problem is nobody knew about them. Nobody had heard about them. So we've started here with some of them. The most frustrating part about the work, all those stories I wasn't able to include. I have received very good responses to the book. People have stopped me and tell me how great they think it is. They write me letters and all that. One lady in California wrote me two letters, and her second letter said, "I just had to write you again to tell you how much I enjoyed that book." It took me almost 4 years to write. When it was finally finished, my mother-in-law got a copy and saw how thick it was, and she said, "No wonder it took so long." And you can imagine what happened to your family when you go through a project as long as that. 4 years is a long time to put aside my two children and my wife. But they were great. And they put up with it, and was finally out the following Sunday. We were at a church. You know, during church service, the pastor will ask, "Do you have any prayer to share with people? Do you have anything you want to give thanks for? Do you have any announcements?" My 8-year-old daughter raised her hand, and I looked over at her, and I thought, I wonder what was up. The pastor said, "Yes, sure, stand up." She stood up and she says, "Thank God, Daddy's finished the book."
For different reasons, I think we all share that feeling. Are there any last questions? We have time for a few. Yes.
The deaf, will the deaf, you do it. Will the folk life, deaf folk life part continue next year in the festival?
Question is, will the folk life continue? Deaf folk life. We just don't know. If you would like there to be a deaf folklore section of the festival next year, please tell somebody in the Smithsonian Folklife programs. We'd appreciate that.
Yes. You stole the words right out of my mouth. Let's see. Not out of my mouth. Let's see. It was out of my fingers you took them. Off my fingertips.
Other questions?
I'd like to add to your question. I think it's a wonderful question, and I know we're happy to hear it. I'm sure some of you may realize that for many years, deaf people were not considered a cultural group. For many years, educators of the deaf were geared toward making deaf people hearing people, and that's impossible. Then sign language was accepted as a legitimate language, and many deaf people were gave a lot of pride in identity. And you've perhaps heard about our heroes and other things. Now deaf people are starting to come out of the woodwork, and I thank you for asking the question.
I think it's really been wonderful. Is there somebody at the Smithsonian special that people might be able to write?
Yes. You can write to Ralph Rinzler, R-I-N-Z-L-E-R, Director of Folklife Programs, Smithsonian Institution. I'm sure he'd be glad to hear from you. Any more questions? Any other questions? Yes.
I have a story to tell about my parents.
All right, come on up here and share your story.
Okay, I'm a hearing person, and both of my parents are deaf people, and I'm very proud of my parents because I am now 45 years old, and 2 years ago we had a wedding celebration, anniversary celebration for my parents, who are both 50 years old, married 50 years. Okay, do you want to interpret for me? Okay, lip read, okay. And it was very nice because in the room with about 150 people were half hearing people who were family and relatives and half deaf people who I knew from childhood. When my parents went out to visit with their deaf people to church, to socials, to alumni get-togethers at deaf schools, they took all three children, my older sister and my younger brother. And so I have known many, many, many deaf people from my parents' life for many years. The school teachers, Miss Littlefield with the big floppy hats at all the picnics. I remember a good friend of my parents, Victoria Wysocki, who is a beautiful signer and does much pantomime, and you could understand her as a child. But my parents worked very hard and married for 52 years, retired. They still have their very good friends from many, many years. And when I look at my parents, I think they had a wonderful life together with each other, and I'm proud of them.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Thank you very much. I'm afraid that we're going to have to bring this workshop to an end because we have another program starting in 10 minutes. I'll make some announcements about that in just a minute, but would you first help me thank our participants for their stories? Our next program, which will begin here at 3 o'clock, will be a special presentation by Ella Mae Lentz entitled American Sign Language, Its People and Its Beauty, a presentation in which Ella Lentz will present some of her own poetry and some poetry by other deaf poets and a couple of her translations of English poems, and it's well worth staying for. Well, please come back at 3 o'clock for that. Right now, if we're lucky, we will be demonstrating the TTY in the other tent. That is a device that deaf people can use to communicate over the telephone. Yes, book sales. We have a few books on deaf culture in America, some books of Dorothy Miles' poetry, Jack Gannon's Deaf Heritage, and a couple of other titles over in the craft sales tent, at this end of the craft sales tent, if you're interested in taking something home with you to remember all this by. And I guess that's about all. For our deaf visitors especially, we would like you to share your stories with us. Stories like these about people who've been important to you, stories you've heard about other deaf people, stories about your old teachers in school, about your life growing up. And we have a TV crew here from Gallaudet College. Over in our other tent, where you see a blue sheet tacked up next to the wooden hands, fingerspelling hands, the crew is ready, and we would love to have you come over and share your stories. They'll be put in an archive of deaf storytelling, deaf folklore, at Gallaudet College and in the Smithsonian Institution. This is a very important project for all of us, so please feel free to come on over. You don't have to be an actor. You don't have to be a ham. We'll interview you and make you feel at ease. Come and share your stories with us, please. Thank you all again very much. About to start our next program here. Despite the threatening weather, we've blocked out some of it, saved the sound system, so that those of you who depend on your ears will have a chance to use them for the interpreter's voice. Our next presentation will be a very special presentation from Ella Mae Lentz, who is herself an increasingly well-known deaf poet composing her own poetry in American Sign Language, and who will today present a program called American Sign Language, Its People and Its Beauty for you. Will you please welcome Ella Mae Lentz?
Hello again. Yes. TV is bothering me. The TV's in the way, people are complaining. Can you move it? Okay, you have to move around it. I want to begin with a poem by my friend named Dorothy Miles. She's a deaf poet and a good friend of mine. It's entitled Total Communication. You and I. Can we see eye to eye? Or must your eye and I lock horns and struggle till we die? Your mind's not mine, and your experience I experience not, can never learn. Reverse the same. My life transfers a blank. We say, communicate, smile, touch, kiss. And I say, this is what I mean. You nod at me, nod at me excitedly and say, that's what we mean. That. Dismay, tight throat. I look and see that on one hand, that on the other hand, the same. No, not for me. Must we forever eye to eye stare past to what we want to see
or can our minds send messages and your mind's eye meet my mind's eye? Thank you. Obviously, that poem is discussing a problem of communication between two persons, even though they're using the same language. People think they understand each other, but they do not. And here, we have two languages. That means it's even harder to communicate. I have sign language, you have English. Fortunately, we have an interpreter here. But still, there's a lot of responsibility on your and my parts for communication, communicating clearly. That poet, Dot Miles, chose that title, Total Communication. It's funny, because that phrase, Total Communication, comes up all the time in the deaf field. Because a long time ago, people argue about should they communicate orally, the same as hearing people do, or must we let deaf people be free to sign, let them be themselves. There was a controversy, and then the idea came up of total communication. Let the deaf child have the right to communicate. And some people interpreted that as signing and speaking at the same time. Well, that's not the best. We have not found the best solution yet. Total communication is really a big issue in our field. We don't know exactly what total communication means. And I look at persons with the same language and they have trouble understanding each other. Related to deafness, you could say there are two views, like a coin. You know, on one side, the coin, there's also another side. One view of deafness is like one side of the coin. They view deafness as something missing, something they don't have, something that must be improved, something that you must fix. And that view I call the clinical pathological view. It means that something is lacking and you must help, like with hearing aids. You must help with speech therapy. The deaf people have emotional problems. They don't think or feel like hearing people, so therefore you must give them therapy, blah, blah, blah. On the other side, you see deaf people as something that we have. And what is that? A language and a culture. We have language and a culture. For example, the language is different from English. Let me give one sentence to show the difference between the two. In English, we would say, there is only one book in the bookcase. In ASL, we would sign one book there. At first, so bookcase. They're not exactly the same because in ASL, you have additional information of that. That special sign showing how the book is placed. Flat, upwards, leaning against something. So that's one difference. And culture means that a group of people have something physically different from others, something special, and also have a behavior rules. And values, okay? I'll give you an example of that. Physical, the specialty for deaf is hearing. Just as black, Spanish, there's something biological, some biological characteristic. Now, for behavior rules, in the deaf community, we require eye contact for communication. If I'm signing and you're looking around at another place, it's not polite. That's an insult to me. While talking, you can look or be doing something else while the person's talking, that's fine, but not with us. And third, values. We value deafness itself as a positive thing. For example, if a deaf person tries to act more like a hearing person, maybe won't sign or continues talking or won't associate with deaf people, we reject that person and feel that he's not part of our culture. To become a part of the culture, you must accept deafness as a positive value. That gives you a little taste, a little idea. And these two sides of the coin exist at the same time. You cannot forget one or the other. You must look at both sides. But all along, many schools and programs for the deaf looked only at the clinical, pathological view, needing help, poor deaf people. And we've just started to look at the other side and say, ah, that deaf people have a language and culture of their own. Okay, let me give you two poems of how two deaf people look at deafness itself. One is by Jane Wilk called Deafness. Deafness, not to hear music, but to hear emotions and the swaying of trees. Not to hear voices, but to hear colors and the flying birds. Not to hear the rage of ocean, but to hear only flowers grow and the passing of time. The next one poem I wrote myself, and it's called Eye Music. You see, to us deaf people, we have a special kind of rhythm, not dependent on hearing. And this next poem talks about telephone wires. Strange, you think? Strange thing to see music going on in from Eye Music. The eye music of the telephone wires, with the music sheets, with lines that rise and quiver, sway and lower, along with the passing of space and time. No ears needed to hear, nor any instruments to play. Eyes are the ears, and the piano and flute are the wires, and the occasional pole is the drum. Here is one bold wandering wire, and now here are five dancing high and low in turns with the rhythm of the poles. Five disappearing into one again, and then a crowd overlapping quickly, quickly, and then slowly. So beautiful to the eye and heart, one wonders what happens inside. Sign language is special to me, not only because I am deaf, but because it has a lot of potential for poetry. A long time ago, I thought that poetry was not for sign language. Poetry could only be translated, but inventing poetry in sign language, you couldn't. But then I realized that it was possible. Really, we deaf people have poetry all along. One example, I'll tell you a story in ABC, A to Z. Sign language has a special hand shapes, like that, 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 that. And we happen to have a manual alphabet, which is like that, A, B, C, D. Oh, they're missing. Oh, they're gone because of the rain. Well, we used to have the alphabet shown along the edge here. Anyway, we have those hand shapes. Now, some of those shapes are alike. Some are different. Deaf people realize that many are similar, so we choose signs that fit the hand shapes of the manual alphabet and tell a story with it. I'll give you one short story called The Haunted House. First, I will not use a voice interpreter. Watch me, and then I will repeat it with voice interpretation to give you hints of what the signs mean. I'll repeat that. I'll repeat it now. A, knocking on the door. B, door opens. C, searching. D, hear something. E, a yell, a screech. F, my eyes look over. G, taking off. H, I'm hurrying. I'm imagining the worst. J, I see a drawing on the wall. K. it's a man with a cigar. L, there's the frame of the picture. M, I hear another sound. N, I look at it, the picture. O, there's a hole in it. P, behind it something is swinging. Q, it's the queen. R, there's a rope suspended from the ceiling. S, she's hung by the neck. T, quickly. U, I look over. V, standing there. W, someone casting a spell. X, my knees shake. Y, they tell him to stay. And Z, I zoom off. Sign language has its own grammar rules. It happened one night that I had to write a poem for my brother's wedding. And I thought, wedding, what is symbolic, what is it symbolized by? Often by a ring, the circle. Aha, I know the grammar rule in ASL related to circular movement. It's called continuous aspect. If you have a verb like look at, I look at you, and you add this movement, it means I'm looking at something continuously, okay? So in this poem, I chose verbs, nouns that were represented by circles for my brother's wedding. The sister-in-law's name is Alice, and my brother's name is Gil. And the poem is entitled, The Circle of Life. God in heaven has planned this. Here in the world, a circle by itself. Yes, the world turns continuously. Time passes by continuously. The sun rises and sets continuously. The years pass by continuously. But once a wonderful thing happened. It began with a dot here and a dot there. One was Alice and Gil. Both lived far away from each other. Both grew up, cried, laughed, played, fought, grew some more, went to school and learned and experienced their lives moving in a circle towards each other, closer and closer. Then suddenly they touched each other, split up, touched again, split up again, touched again, and became closer. Their lives became a ring of love bonded in marriage. Yes, the world turns continuously. Time passes by continuously. The sun rises and sets continuously. The years pass by continuously. Alice and Gil, united in marriage, continuously. ASL poetry, it's interesting. A few people have done some research, and I've noticed that ASL poetry seems to have a few principles. First of all, you must have balance between hands. For example, I'm a right-handed person, so I talk mostly with my right hand. But in poetry, it seems that I use the left more to balance the hands. Second, we seem to have a flow of movement. Choose signs that fit together to give flow. And then hand shapes, you don't have to use so many. Choose a few, and then through those poems, use those few hand shapes you've chosen. And fourth, you must have design in the air. For instance, I establish something over here for a certain meaning. And then over there, I have other certain ideas, or here or there. Or special movements that's the basic idea. And then fourth, you must have rhythm. fast or slow, and so on. Strong body beats, graceful movements. I'll give one short poem to give you an idea of those principles. It's called Winter, written by Dot Miles. First, I'll sign in English first. Winter contrast, black and white, bare trees, covered ground, hard ice, soft white snow, birth in death. Okay, and now, as it's signed, winter, contrast, black and white, bare trees, covered ground, hard ice, soft white snow, birth in death. Okay, now, wait a minute, you don't have to clap. See, look at the signs, the balance between my hands. Here's the contrast. I leave that there. I establish black over here, and I move to white over there. Bare trees on that side, then over here, covered ground. Move over here to hard ice. Change to soft white snow. Birth into death. And notice the flow of movements. All the hand shapes related with these shapes, five, kind of. Bare trees, covered ground. Hard is a little different. Hard, but there we have that, the hooked hands. Then changing to soft, and it all flows. We're not hard and then soft. We move the hand into the next sign. Soft white snow, birth into death, and create the flow, okay? Then design in the air, it's obvious. Here is dark, death, hard, tree, black, and over here is white, soft, birth. And the rhythm, I sign soft and gracefully over here and hard and stiff over for this side. You see, you get the idea? Now, through the other poems, I mean, not all poems are like that, but you will notice some of these things. Media, television, movies, are very important to deaf people. Why? Because they're visual, and they can preserve our signs. We don't have to write it out and lose something in the signs from writing. Movie and television shows us, and pictures, too. So a while back, a few years ago in California, we had two women, one hearing, one deaf. Both were newscasters, and both did a lot in relation to the deaf community. One hearing woman had just made a documentary for news called The Glass Wall about deafness. Why? Because she thought that deafness was related to a glass wall. You could see the person but not hear them. Or on the positive side, that deaf people could communicate through a glass wall easily, like on a train, for instance. The person inside and outside could sign away and understand each other, while the hearing person would be stuck, interfered by that wall. So I wrote a poem for that awards night called The Glass Wall. Thank you, thank you. These are gestures from our hearts, pouring out through the glass wall, because you and you beyond the glass wall, with a frame and ears, have shown us that the wall will always be there, but not necessarily shaded, overlooked. That what we thought before, live news captioned, the impossible is possible. Interpreter full screen, the impossible is possible. Our own newscaster, deaf newscaster, the impossible is possible. That with the glass wall, with the frame and ears, we could show all what we are really like, what we really need. And no matter that the wall is there, people beyond and people behind can reach out to each other over it. Thank you. Thank you. again, the next poem, I'm playing with hand shapes. That shape, and that shape. This poem I wrote because an old boyfriend and I had a fight, and he wouldn't talk to me for a few days. And communication is very important to a deaf person. We need to communicate, but there was no communication for several days, so I wrote this poem entitled Silence, Oh Painful. Silence, oh painful, knowing he has something to say, but don't know what, and knowing I have something to say, but don't know how. Looking into his eyes, a wall forms between us. No more quiet heart exchanges. No more eyes passing invisible words. Touching him, goosebumps up my arm. No more tightening of hands. No more bonds of love. When he is gone, he fades. No more getting letters signed love. No more saving things for sharing. Why? Silence. And as I said before, for many years, deaf people thought that poetry had to be translated from English, famous English poems. And some of us did that. And I would like to share two poems. The first one is Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost. Most of you perhaps know that. And Jabberwocky by Lewis Carroll. Okay? First, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. Whose woods these are? I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there's some mistake. The only other sounds, the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark.